You're listening to Panel Borders. I'm Duncan Knott, and this is Resonance FM's new weekly show about the world of comic books. In this episode, Alex Fitch and I are concluding our interview with Simon Furman and Jeff Senior, the writer and one of the most popular artists of the 1980s Transformers comic.
We've got the movie now, and as you say, there was the animated series in the 80s. You've worked in some of the other media, things like animation with us at the Dan Dare animated series and things like that. Do you have a preference for one over the other, or the different types of challenge?
I mean, I kind of like a balance. If I can be doing some comics, some animation, some, you know, whatever really, you know, prose, book publishing, you know, anything like that. I hate just doing one thing, you know. I mean, I just want to be doing bits and pieces of everything. At the moment I've written one movie script that's doing the rounds, and, you know, I'm sort of, well, co-written with a friend of mine. And we're co-writing a second one, you know, just because, you know, he's got a few ins in the movie business, and we'll see whether we can get something going there. And that's a real nice change of pace, you know, from Transformers, from comics, because you're suddenly writing real people, you know, very real people, and they're talking, you know, in a way that isn't comics. There's a very definite language of comics. You know, people don't talk like that in real world, but when you're suddenly writing movie dialogue, you suddenly have to sort of forget all that and just try and be natural with it. So, yeah, I like a balance, definitely.
Well, and also considering that the new movie's by Michael Bay, you do worry that the humans in that will be less realistic than the robots.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, the bits I've seen so far, the humans actually come across pretty well. You know, I wasn't that wowed at the original script, but when I saw it all come together and, you know, the final sort of dialogue and everything, human characters are pretty good.
I think one worry that people have about the new movie, I think it was reiterated in the panel that you just gave, was that the robots were a bit fussy now. I think someone described Megatron as a walking chandelier.
Awesome, mate.
You say you can do too much with CGI.
Well, I don't know about that, but do you find that there was something about the classic version of the robots that I think maybe struck a chord, for example, when that Citroën advert was on a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think the classic designs are great, and they are classic, I guess. But I understand where the movie was coming from, because they just had to do something very different. You know, they don't want it just to be a nostalgia piece. They don't want it to look like it's aimed at kids. So, you know, very much they, you know, and you know, to be honest, the movie's not pitched at kids at all. It's fairly just sort of full on action movie, which probably appeals to kids completely, but. I understand completely why they've gone this way and why they've, you know, reimagined things. Because, you know, really the audience who know and love the classic characters is probably about 2% of what they want for a movie audience. So I think they just had to sort of, you know, make it look contemporary, I guess.
Now, are you a fan of Michael Bay movies in general, like Armageddon, The Island?
I don't know, I call myself a fan, but he knows how to do good action movies. And like I say, what I've seen of the Transformers stuff looks great into the action stuff. So, I don't know, I mean, I think it just needed somebody, you know, slightly big and over the top to make this, you know, into an event rather than just a kind of, you know, a summer movie. And yeah, I'm like I say, I've been impressed so far. But, you know, I'm not a big Michael Bay fan, per se.
I think you were saying earlier, Jeff, that when you had to draw the comic for the new Titan periodical that's coming out, you were just given CGI views of the characters from one angle and then from another, and it was very hard to work out how they changed from one to the other, when presumably back in the day you actually had the toys in front of you and you could turn them through 30 degrees or whatever.
Yeah, well, originally, when we first did Transformers, we got really good... what do you call it?
Model
sheets. I keep forgetting that. Model sheets. And you had like a front side and back view, you know. But on these ones, we just get like a front view, and then another front view, but like bent over action pose, and then another front view. And so, well, I don't know what the back looks like. And because the illustrations were quite small, you couldn't see a face at all. So all that was like, hang on, how would you fill in the missing parts? So I was just mainly drawn Optimus Prime, and he still looks like a robot of all of them. I suppose he's changed the least, hasn't he, from what I saw.
Yeah.
Is there a reason why Optimus Prime didn't actually change much? Or?
No, he's changed quite a bit, but
not
you know,
as much as
he's still recognisably Optimus Prime.
Yeah. It was just having to fill in all those missing parts, and you know, because I didn't see, I haven't actually seen many clips, and I didn't see the 20 minute preview that Simon saw. I wish I had; it would have been nice. But I'm sure when I do actually get around to seeing the film, I'm sure I thought, yeah, I'll be pleased I did some more Transformers. You know, but yeah, it's just a challenge to do them again. And I understand that things are going to move on and designs change. And I'm pretty certain when I see the film, I thought, yeah, I quite like them now, even though I moaned about them, especially when I get drunk, as Simon vouched for. But I'm sure when I see the film, it'll all make sense anyway. So I'm looking forward to it.
I guess there was one question which is more about the theory of it. I mean, you mentioned there's the language of comics which is distinctive, and you say, well, it's a change from doing a proper job. Where does that sort of suggest comic sits? Is it just an art form in itself, or is it something that is perhaps just almost pushed to the side, maybe as a storyboard for the films, or, you know, try out for something else?
I don't know. I mean, I tend to think of it as a fairly valid art form. You know, it's been going an awful lot of years, and these days seems to have a lot more sort of general acceptance, and, you know, less of the just for kids kind of tag. And yeah, no, I mean, I think comics is right up there. You know, sure, a lot of people may just think, you know, of the Beano or the Dandy when you talk comics, but a lot of people now, just because movies are picking up so many ideas, you know, they kind of understand that there is this thing called comics.
Well, I think it was Paul Gravett who said when we interviewed him that you just don't realise that comics are absolutely everywhere, from instructions and aeroplanes to, you know, basically the layout of tabloid newspapers. I think there's something very primal about the combination of pictures and text, you know, that it's probably why it's existed as an art form since pictograms in Egyptian times.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose in somewhere like Japan, where they have three different alphabets and, you know, sort of different languages, you know, they need something visual, you know, and that's why manga's so popular over there, because a lot of people just don't want to sit and read a book. They'd much rather read a manga, and it's quite acceptable over there. And yeah, we could do with a dose of that over here, probably.
Yeah, I think it's just a different attitude, isn't it? I mean, in Europe, France, etc., I mean, Spain, people hold comics with more respect, and as you know, in Japan, businessmen read them on the train into work. So it's just a totally different attitude. Yeah, I suppose with every film's coming out, etc., there's obviously much more respect for them. Yeah, sure.
When you started off in advertising, did you go in with a portfolio of cars that you'd drawn that were about to turn into robots, or was it just the fact that you had a portfolio of work that it was enough to get you into that line of sort of creation?
Yeah, when I first got an advertiser, obviously coming straight from comics, it was, my phone was full of comic book stuff. And when you start working in a studio, like an art studio that specialises in storyboards for advertising, then you realise that, you know, you've got to start drawing, that sounds such a silly thing, but real people and real cars and real houses and real streets. Because previous to that, it was all like Judge Dredd or Based in the Future, where you just make it up. And so it was a whole new enjoyable learning curve, because I've learned a hell of a lot in advertising. And then as far as storytelling is concerned as well, you've got to be really careful with the storytelling, which I was quite surprised, because you'd think, being a printed medium like comics, that the storytelling would be something vitally important. But in advertising, it really is scrutinised. And I totally understand why, because it's got to be shown to people who've got to get the idea straight away, and there's got to be no question, which I think I've learnt a lot in advertising to do with storytelling. I think the problem I had with a lot of comics, especially, I don't know, over the last few years, is it's more about kind of cram as much into this page as possible, and the storytelling gets forgotten. I'd rather just see simple drawn story, because at the end of the day, you are telling a story, and if you just cram as many things in as you can, just to almost like show off your art skills or whatever, then you're missing the point of the important part, which is you're trying to convey a story clearly to the people reading it. But you just keep learning, I guess.
Considering, I suppose, that the cartoon series and the comic in a way was a glorified advert for a Hasbro product, it was good training for you to then work in advertising. And then conversely, because all sorts of advertising has an implicit narrative that tries to get people who might buy a product into it, you know, it works both ways.
Occasionally the big agencies, they might want something done in a comic book style to convey their idea to the client. In other words, it seems like manga, that was a fashion thing, you draw it manga style. Not too long ago, literally a couple of months ago, I did do a concept board for the Citroën. It was a top secret idea. I don't know if they'll make it, because it was a concept idea. But it was interesting to do a Transformer again, because that's literally what it is. Because I quite like the Citroën advert. I think that that really stood out. I think the original one, I didn't know this, was French. The guy, when he turned into the Tass Danzig, that's actually, the French did that one. I didn't know that either. But the British, they're involved too, and this idea was from the British. So it was very competitive between Britain and France as well, whose idea gets made next time. So, but I don't know how far it's got or what's happening.
When the animated movie came out in the 80s with the voices of Leonard Nimoy and Eric Idle and Orson Welles, that was kind of a shot in the arm for the Transformers comics back then. I mean, I assume that you're hoping that the live-action movie will have a similar effect on the IDW range.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I mean, I've never been quite convinced how much crossover there is between the success of a movie and sales of a comic. But, you know, yeah, I certainly hope it just sort of keeps the franchise ticking over for the next sort of couple of years till the sequel and so on, you know. I mean, I definitely think it's good because it will just keep it there in the public consciousness and it will keep money rolling into the toy company and the comics will sell well, you know. So I think it's good, but, you know, I don't know how, you know, whether suddenly, you know, the comics will be selling a million or something. I don't think it will quite work that way. I just think, you know, it'll keep it going for, you know, steadily for a while.
Well, did Andrew say that when the film comes out in America, they're going to be handing out a free comic in cinemas?
Yeah, there's going to be a free 10-page, certainly 10-page strip comic, sort of, yeah, as a freebie, which sort of picks up from movie prequel 4. So, yeah, you know, that's going to be out there.
I mean, it astonishes me that Marvel don't do the same thing when their movies come out, because, I mean, I know Spider-Man 3 coincided with Free Comic Book Day, but why they didn't then print another million copies of their Free Spider-Man comic and hand them out in cinema seems, you know, crazy.
Well, I don't know. Don't know the answer to that.
And you've also done some mini-comics for the DVD releases as well.
Yeah, there's going to be one for the Madman release in Australia of the whole of season one. And it's a little 8-page story set between the end of the animated series and the beginning of the movie.
That was fun to work on?
That was great fun to do. You know, difficult to tell a whole story in 8 pages. But it's good. You know, it was fun to do, yeah. And Nick Roach is drawing it, so he was pleased because it features Hot Rod. So yeah, you know, it was fun one to do.
So keep an eye out for that and Death's Head Volume 2.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Thank you.
If you'd like to know more about today's show and download the podcast, please visit www.panelborders.com, where you can find links to previous shows and our blog, which has details of the graphic short story competition being run by The Observer, as well as various Transformers links. On next week's show, Alex and I are talking to Steve Yell, a veteran British comics artist who's produced seminal work for 2000 AD, ranging from Grant Morrison's superhero epic Zenith to his current strip Detonator X about giant robots and dinosaurs, as well as forays into the American market on Fantastic Four and The Invisibles. And that's at the same time next week.